Welcome to episode 71 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski in Pennsylvania, and Jeff Smith is joining me again from Washington.
Hello, everybody.
We got a lot to talk about this week, so we'll jump right in here. First off, 2 weeks ago, we were covering both the Deutsche Bank and the Western Open. I kind of refuse to call it the other name, at least this year. Going back to the Deutsche Bank, Phil Mickelson making a rare appearance, I believe, at the TPC of Boston, the newly remodeled TPC of Boston. Goes head-to-head with Tiger in the first two rounds, comes out ahead, and then happens to be paired with Tiger in the penultimate group on Sunday, and again beats Tiger Woods. Pretty amazing showdown, and really probably the best we've seen since Tiger and Phil back at Doral a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Phil Mickelson turned on what he's been missing through the middle of the season following his wrist injury. And so this is kind of the Phil that we thought we were going to become accustomed to seeing, you know, when Butch teamed up with him. So yeah, an outstanding win for Phil, and certainly unusual in their history.
Yeah, and Phil Mickelson, that gave him the lead. He earned $1.26 million. Still not enough to take over Tiger Woods in the money list, but it did move him on top of the FedEx Cup points list at the time, ahead of Steve Stricker, and who played well also at the tournament but didn't come away with the win. Tiger Woods tied for second, two shots back, I believe, with two other people. So he split the, you know, second, third, and fourth round averaged points between those people. So he only got 3,700 points out of that when he could have had, I believe, 5,500 or something like that, had he finished second alone. So it was odd, though. I mean, Phil Mickelson, we'll talk about this a bit later too as well. Phil Mickelson beat Tiger Woods in that final round, started with a one-stroke lead on Tiger and then beat him by a shot in that round, so finished two ahead, but had something like 23 putts through the whole thing. So his driving was okay. Jeff, you talked about Phil working with Butch, but it's really his putting that got him through that final round and put him on top, where Tiger Woods had 31 putts or something, I believe.
Yeah, well, all through the wrist injuries, you know, we watched Phil Mickelson really struggle with the putter. So yeah, that was probably maybe he spent a little more time with the putter in the short game after working on his full swing for so long, but that obviously got it done for him in that final round.
When he had that wrist injury, maybe he putted a lot more than normal because, you know, towards the end, because he couldn't swing the driver all the time. So you never know, but it was a good day for Phil and a good week because he didn't miss any putts inside of 8 feet, I believe. That's always a good time. Phil Mickelson then used the post-round interview with Jimmy Roberts and then also in the press tent after that to talk about how he wasn't sure if he was going to be at the BMW Championship, the Western Open, the next week. Of course, Tiger Woods skipped the week before the Deutsche Bank. Phil had played the first two events and then goes, yeah, I'm not very happy with some of the things. You know, I asked Tim Fincham to do some of these things and they didn't get done. He said, my frustration from the past year came from asking for a couple things in the FedEx Cup that weren't done and not really feeling all that bad now if I happen to miss an event. So it's like a little cat fight here, Phil versus Timmy.
Yeah, a little cat fight. I mean, there's a lot of folks trying to use a force to figure out what Phil was talking about. A lot of speculation there on what he meant by that. But, you know, for me, it was, I didn't really think much of it. But then, of course, when he was missing last weekend, and then we saw him on the phone with Johnny Miller. And for me, then it was like, okay, this is odd. Why isn't Phil there? He's doing this to make a statement, but he's not, he's making a private statement. I'm not really getting it. He kind of looked like a bit of a whiner to me there last weekend, although I didn't really think anything of it until I saw him on the phone.
Yeah, that was a little odd too. But a lot of people think maybe, you know, I mean, Tiger and Phil both said they pretty much, after the PGA, they pretty much want to wind down. They pretty much, you know, none of this, they didn't ever say, we want to play 7 out of 9 weeks and then immediately segue into a President's Cup or Ryder Cup the next week. I mean, they never said that. They said, we want to pretty much close it down when as soon as football starts up. Guess what? Football started up and they're still playing, and they got the Tour Championship next week. Then they have the President's Cup. Next year will be the Ryder Cup. They don't want to play all these events all in a row. They want to have, you know, Firestone maybe, then the PGA, and then maybe a month off. Then they'll play the President's Cup or Ryder Cup. That's going to be during football season pretty much every year, the beginning of it. And that's it. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's this whole feeling of being forced to compete. Maybe they didn't think that you should reset the season-long points totals quite so much. Who knows? It's all speculation as to far as what Phil Mickelson wanted. But it seems odd that someone who works so hard on maintaining a polished public image like Phil does would get into this kind of little tiff. It just seems a little childish.
You know, to take a step back and look at all the people who haven't competed, I wonder now over the next 2 or 3 years how this is going to play out. Because obviously, as you said, a lot of these high-profile guys, especially Phil and Tiger, they pretty much shut it down after the final major. And we're going to see over the next couple of years what kind of sort of fatigue might set in, just mental fatigue. You know, they think, hey, listen, I used to be able to hang it up, but now that this playoff has started, I got to play right up until the very end. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see how it all pans out.
That's right. Someone who's not been fatigued recently is Steve Stricker. This is my segue into Tiger Woods winning the Western Open this year. But Steve Stricker has been in the final group, it seems like. What are they? They played 4-4-4, 12 rounds of golf. It seems like he's been in the final pairing, you know, in like 10 or 9 of those or something.
Yeah.
He's always there. You know, his shirt color changes, but it's the same guy every week. He was in the final pairing here at the Western Open. Did not manage to beat Tiger Woods, who started, I believe, one stroke back of the lead. Woods shot a final round 63, 8 under par. No bogeys in the round, 8 birdies. Missed a short one on 17 that could have been a 62. But really having to go deep here to win this one in the final round. A pair of 4-unders kicked off his Thursday, Friday rounds, but then 8-under on the last day. So
a lot of credit has to go to Stricker. I mean, as you said, we've seen him in the final pairing several times, and he's playing some great golf this year. Obviously, Tiger, you know, put the pedal to the metal, and there wasn't much Stricker could have done. As Stricker said, I would have had to shoot a 63 to beat him, and of course, that would have been a great score. But we saw, you know, Tiger drop a 63 on the course, and Stricker, you know, giving him credit, he did shoot a good final round there, but he just wasn't able to keep up with the 63.
All right, and speaking of putting, Tiger Woods had 11 one-putt greens, which means he had 7 two-putt greens, which is a total of 25 putts. So if you're ever wondering what it takes to shoot a 63, hit a lot of greens and then take mid to low 20s in number of putts.
Yeah.
That'll do it for you.
And good luck with that.
Tiger Woods lead in the official world golf rankings.
Tiger Woods is leading Mickelson by a huge margin. He's at 23.8. Phil Mickelson now second place at 9.8. Furyk, you know, over a point back at 8.2. So, boy, he's spreading it out again.
14-point difference. Interestingly, the way the math in the FedEx Cup works, only 5 golfers, because next week, if you show up, you're guaranteed to get like 900 points or something like that, finishing in 30th, basically for showing up. So Tiger Woods will get like the extra 995 points or something like that. I forget what it is. His total right now, 112,733. KJ Choi is the lowest ranked guy at 5th with 103,100, who has a chance to win. And for him to win, he has to win the Tour Championship, and Woods has to finish 25th or lower. Stricker must finish no higher than 4th, and Mickelson must finish no higher than 3rd. That's what KJ Choi needs to win. Rory Sabatini, who's in 4th right now, has to win the Tour Championship, has to have Tiger finish 12th or lower, and Stricker and Mickelson must each finish no higher than 3rd. So really, it's looking like Tiger, Steve Stricker, and Phil Mickelson are the only people worth with a chance to win the $10 million prize.
You know, it's amazing. You know, it's kept it tight. I mean, in the favor of the way that the PGA Tour has chosen to do this, it's obviously they reset the points. And we said a few weeks ago, you know, why are you resetting the points? It's not a true playoff. But now it is tight, and it's keeping the interest peaked. But Tiger Woods, a virtual lock. I mean, if he finishes, what, in the top 7? Nobody can win. But
pretty
Tiger.
Much, yeah. The thing is, though, I'm saying about the FedEx Cup this year, Tiger Woods is motivated to win the first one. I'm not sure he's going to be quite so motivated to win the second one if he wins the first one. So, you know, if for some reason Tiger Woods hadn't won or doesn't win this one, you know, with 6 victories, 60 in a career, he won a major this year. There's no way, if Tiger wins the FedEx Cup, all it does is prove what we already know to be true, that he was the best golfer of the year. If somehow he doesn't win the FedEx Cup, then the FedEx Cup looks silly because it told us something that was incorrect, that someone else was the best golfer of the year. So it's a no-win situation for the FedEx Cup. It's either going to tell us something that we already know, or it's going to contradict something we know to be true.
Well, what I would say is that it's reinforcing the idea, and of course I'm contradicting myself from our podcast a couple of weeks ago, but it reinforces the idea that this is a playoff, and it's not necessarily the best team, the best player, but it's the person who steps it up when it counts. Obviously, Tiger Woods has he has the advantage here coming into this, you know, this final event.
But hey, give the Western Open win to Steve Stricker and put Tiger Woods in second. Steve Stricker has a monster lead, you know, despite winning only 2 times in the year, to Woods 5 with a major. And, you know, it's like Steve is not the best player. He just happened to play the best when the points were doubled.
Yeah, so. Well, and it speaks to how meaningless the season, you know, the season points tend to be when the points are reset.
So Stricker was fairly far down in the list. I mean, he was in the top 30, I believe, but 16th or something like that. We will be right back after this message from Titleist, so stay tuned.
7 years ago in Las Vegas, Nevada, the Titleist Pro V1 made its professional debut.
I won with it the first time I put it in play.
It was an instant phenomenon. Number one on every worldwide professional tour. Number one with PGA professionals, with collegiate players, top amateurs, men, women, and juniors.
Seems like everybody plays a Pro V1.
The Pro V1 became the uncontested standard of performance. And best-selling ball in golf shops everywhere.
It's my number one seller, by far.
Nothing else comes close.
Now there's an all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
I won the first time I put it in play.
Pro V1X does what I want it to do.
The Pro V1X gives me better distance control.
I love the new alignment line.
It gives me more confidence.
The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Better than ever.
Welcome back. Two quick things to wrap up from the earlier part that we kind of forgot about. Phil Mickelson's official reason for skipping the Western Open was because he wanted to go home and spend time with his family. That's his usual excuse or reason, depending on how you want to look at it. His kids were starting school this week and everything. But kind of interesting that after the Monday finish, Phil went to play in a corporate outing Tuesday in Chicago. So he was in the city on Tuesday. The tournament started on Thursday, but opted to go home. Then also, I do think the FedEx Cup is succeeding at some level at getting some of these guys to play again. Phil Mickelson played an event that he wouldn't normally have played, most likely, at the Deutsche Bank and ended up winning it. Tiger would have played there. He would have played the Western Open because the one benefits his tournament, or his charity, sorry, and the other is a course that he likes a lot at Cog Hill there. So I think he would have played both of those also. He's not necessarily playing more, but I think it's gotten Phil out more and a few of the other guys out to a few more events.
I've seen a lot more golf out of Tiger and Phil, no doubt about it.
Well, we'll move on from that catch up or patch over segment to our first here in the Beating Balls segment. Big news came out Sunday. It started leaking Saturday, but came out Sunday. The players at the Tour Championship will not be allowed to practice on the greens at all, ever. There's going to be no pro-am on Wednesday. There's going to be no practice rounds to where you're allowed to hit the ball onto the green. I guess you can drive the ball and then, I don't know, play 20 yards short of the green. I'm not sure I see a point in that, but you can go out and practice your driving on the course, I guess. Too much heat recently in Atlanta, and the greens are in absolutely horrible, horrible, horrible shape.
It's going to be slick. It's going to be U.S. Open time.
Yeah, but they're dead. They've seeded recently, like within the past 2 weeks. I mean, they're dead. It's not about speed. It's about dead grass.
What a way to do it. I mean, you've got a playoff event, major, major event. And, you know, when's the last time we've seen players unable to practice?
I don't understand why they can't move the tournament to TPC of Sawgrass. I don't understand why they can't move the tournament to some other PGA Tour owned property. Sure, it's kind of a last minute thing, but you're only affecting the travel plans of 30 players. And these would be 30 players that have earned plenty of money this year, so I'm sure they can afford to change their flights. I mean, it sounds weird, but you know, we're deciding a $10 million championship, not to mention the Tour Championship tournament itself, on a course that's going to be substantially luck based.
Right.
Not letting people practice? I don't know. This is just unheard of. I can't believe there's not a backup plan, especially since the Tour has known about this for a long time. They said it's been 90 degrees plus for 28 days, including 10 straight days at 100 degrees or higher. So the area went without rain for 25 days.
Whoops. And don't they have hoses on the course?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to...
The course has a boo-boo, and the Tour didn't decide to say anything about it until just now. So be interesting to see. Some of the top five players, I think the top five players, the ones that have a chance to win the whole thing, they could say, you know, they could get together and be like, you know what, this is not the way to decide this kind of thing. Let's just all not play.
That would be a miracle. I mean,
it would be it'll be the gentlemanly thing to do.
I suppose it would be the gentlemanly thing to do, but when was the last time you saw any of those guys putting their heads together like that?
Seen them butting heads, but not in the way that you're saying. So
yeah.
Our next story here involves Phil Mickelson again and Tiger Woods at the Deutsche Bank Championship. Apparently, Butch Harmon told Phil Mickelson about some of Tiger's idiosyncrasies. We'll call it that for now. That's what it was assumed to be. You know, whether or not it was a little bit of gamesmanship maybe that Tiger Woods had, or whether it was just something like maybe he clenches his left butt cheek when he wants to hit a draw or something. You know, we didn't know. There was a lot of speculation. Phil Mickelson said, yeah, Butch told me some things to look for, and I was kind of laughing about them through the round as I noticed them.
Is this like the first time we've ever seen anyone? I mean, never mind Phil Mickelson, because Phil has had virtually no success against Tiger in the final pairing. Is this like the first time we've ever seen anybody kind of able to relax, you know, when the pressure pressures on in the final round. To me, that was almost Bob
May. But I mean, you have to go back that far before you can really think of anybody else in the PGA.
Yeah, but I mean, of course, anybody laughing about Tiger's mannerisms, no one's laughing. They all know exactly what they're up against, and you know, Phil was able to kind of, I don't know, take it in stride,
right?
In a way that we've never seen a player be able to do.
Yeah, Butch later told Brian Hewitt of the Golf Channel that what the things were just things that Phil could actually look at to improve his own game. Like, Tiger has the chance to putt out. He'll get out of the way. He'll finish the hole. That way he can maybe stop thinking about that hole. You know, he can close his mind down and take a little break before he has to move on. Or different things like that. Or like how he'll walk slower, take deeper breaths to slow down his whole body when he starts to get nervous or things like that. So they were more, according to Brian Hewitt, there were more things that Phil Mickelson could learn from Tiger than, you know, that maybe he didn't know about or didn't know to do than, you know, actual like weird little things like Tiger always picks his left nostril before his right one, or, you know, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
So maybe Phil learned, you know, if he did learn, he put it to use right away and won. So good for him. We've talked about this off and on, PGA Tour's drug testing policy. Apparently, Tim Fincham announced that they plan to have something ready for 2008. The list of banned substances is very similar to the LPGA's list that we commented on a few weeks ago, but not much else is known. They don't know about testing protocols, whatever. It says it's too premature to talk about specifics at this point. There will be a combination of substances on the agreed-upon list when we finish our work. So good news, but not much news.
And I think it would behoove the PGA Tour to release this list early so that PGA Tour players can begin to pre-test themselves, you know, so that they don't find that, whoops, they blew it. And boy, that's going to be big news the first time someone's caught with any kind of a substance.
Right. Of course, Sergio Garcia, our next story here, was disqualified at the PGA Championship because he stormed out of the tent after Boo Weekly wrote down the wrong score for one of his holes. Sergio signed then for the wrong score and was disqualified. Turns out Sergio was paired with Boo Weekly a couple weeks later at the Deutsche Bank twice, not once, but twice in the first two rounds. Boo Weekly put down the wrong score again for Sergio Garcia. He said, I fouled it up again. I don't know what it is about him. I keep messing it up. It's aggravating. So my theory is this. The PGA Tour so dislikes the ignorant little brat that is Sergio Garcia that they paired him with Boo Weekly so that Boo Weekly would mess up his scores and he might get disqualified again. And they would not.
Yeah, and Boo Weekly couldn't be more like Columbo. I mean, he's like, what? I don't know. It was a mistake, you know? I mean, there must be something about the guy, you know?
The PGA Tour paired everybody by the rankings in the FedEx Cup in those tournaments in the first couple rounds, but I think it'd be funny if they paired them together so he would get disqualified. I'm all in favor of disqualifying Sergio from anything.
I think Sergio probably is going to be paying attention from now on, though.
Yeah, he's learned his lesson. He didn't get disqualified at the Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, I hope he's learned.
Tiger Woods has learned that Gatorade wants to sponsor him, and they've inked a $100 million deal. That's a lot of Gatorade.
That is a lot of Gatorade for sure. Five years, $100 million. I mean, Tiger Woods is the most marketable athlete, what, in history?
Right. He's the most marketable person in the world, perhaps.
I mean, yeah.
$100 million, I don't hear movie star. Who else gets this kind of anything?
No one. I mean, you know, Michael Jordan in the heyday would pull down some serious cash, but Tiger Woods, my goodness.
It'd be interesting if Tiger had gone to a college that was a big rival of Florida Gators, if he would actually endorse Gatorade. I don't know if Stanford and, what is it, University of Florida are that big of a rival that he couldn't do that. So,
right.
But hey, money money works too. So.
Yeah, money does talk.
They should sign up Chris DeMarco though, right?
He's the man.
He would endorse Gatorade for free, I bet. Just give him some Florida Gators gear and he'd be all over it, right?
He would be happy.
Of course, he's not had a great year, so I don't know how good a spokesman he would be this year.
I think most of the public would say Chris DeMarco who?
That's right. Well, that about does it for episode 71. You can visit our show notes online at thesandtrap.com. Check our come out every Wednesday. Visit our forum at thesandtrap.com/forum. And, for Jeff Smith, this is, again, Eric Hu saying hasta la vista.
Hey, we'll see you next time.